You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for June 20th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the year of our Lord 2003, version 2.0, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
May I just say that I think Dick Cheney and his daughter, the mother and patriot Liz Cheney.
Yeah, she is a mother and a patriot. Let us not forget.
A mother and a patriot. They owe the entire universe a courtesy flush.
They do.
For the shit coming out of their mouths this week.
Well, they always have.
Yep.
That's his unholy devil child. And he has raised her up in the way of his church. And he has basically transplanted his entire Gorgon id into her skull, and now she's become Mini-Me. And the burning question, and this is the one that I have been almost by myself out there chipping away at this week, although thank you Boo Man Tribune picked up one of my posts.
Oh, nice.
There is, everyone across the board has the same sort of overarching question, which is Wolfowitz and Crystal and Cheney and all these people who are just demonstrably horribly wrong. Why are they on television? Mm-hmm. Why the hell do these people still have a platform? And Jonathan Chait, because apparently he just has to be a fucking contrarian every now and then, today took the contrary view. Well, yeah, but what about all the people all the liberals who said that 45,000 Americans would be killed in the invasion of Baghdad? Their estimations are wrong too. So shouldn't we really examine everyone's position all along? And why should we listen to their foreign policy expertise? So other than John Chait, who has a giant column and a media presence that I don't really care if your estimations are wrong. I don't care so much if you fell for someone lying to you. If you were taken in by the urgency and panic and we're all going to die tomorrow if we don't act right now, panic peddling, mm-hmm, that was being sold to you by the leader of the free world and everyone in his fucking cabinet, because that's what the leader of the free world should do if there's in fact a genuine crisis right on the horizon that requires immediate action. That's exactly what you'd expect. It is the people who were pumping that lie, pimping that lie, who created that lie and sold it again and just pushed that panic button and really took us down to our most primal terror and used that as fucking leverage, mm-hmm, to, mm-hmm, get into an oil-rich country and loot the place. Those are the people whose acts, there is no act of contrition great enough other than stepping in front of a bus, as far as I'm concerned, that will forgive them for doing that. Those are the people I absolutely cannot forgive for this. And those are the people I think there's no excuse for putting them back on a public platform.
Well, I want to respectfully disagree with you on one aspect of that. I remember when Colin Powell went before the UN.
Uh-huh.
You remember that day?
I do.
And the next day, I said to my then husband, and both of us were anti-war and didn't think that the dots were connecting here between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. That made no sense to anybody in my house. Right. But I remember saying to my ex, who was then my husband, look, the New York Times says that Colin Powell makes a compelling case.
Exactly.
And therefore, I don't have the same access to information that either one of those people do.
Exactly.
Times or, uh-huh, Colin Powell. And I trust both of them.
Right.
Stupidly.
No, well,
I didn't add stupidly, because we as a culture, the well-educated left as a cultural group, were not prepared for this scope of the lying that was done.
No.
We just weren't prepared for that.
No, the absolute bald-faced, naked, 24/7 multimedia lie machine that they, without sweating, without blinking, without stuttering one little bit, threw into high gear and just used to bulldoze through everything. Bulldoze tax cuts, bulldoze through social policy. Every time there was a question, it was, yeah, well, the terrorists win. 9/11 changed everything. 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. And I absolutely, but that, I don't think we disagree that much, because I absolutely understand people who were buffaloed into this by the fact that the Bush administration subverted every institution they could lay their filthy hands on in order to pimp their lie.
Yep.
And I because that was the point. If they had told the American people, I want to invade Iraq because it has oil. I want to invade Iraq because they tried to kill my daddy. I want to invade Iraq because there's a group of people called neoconservatives who think we should just decapitate every regime that we don't agree with, and that will somehow cause democracy to spring up spontaneously everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have gone for that. They would have impeached the son of a bitch.
Right.
Instead, we have to create a crisis that out of thin air and lies and panic the American people. And by the way, as long as we're creating this atmosphere of immediate panic, we've got to take this guy down right now. Let's use that, again, to push through every other fucking thing we want.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just use it as a blank check to get everything we want out of this country. Because at some point, it might catch up with us, and then we're stuck with it. But let's use it to make sure we win the 2004 presidential election. Let's make sure we capture the Congress in 2002. Let's make sure that we do all the things we can do. Let's maximize the utility of the gigantic, treasonous lie we are going to tell the American people to loot as much as possible, as fast as possible. And it worked. And remember, the Bush administration never asked for authorization to go to war. They asked for authorization to use force if necessary. They didn't ask, I want to invade Iraq on this date. They said, I need maximum flexibility to negotiate, to talk this guy down. And now we know in retrospect, they had no intention of doing it. They're the ones who got rid of the inspectors. They're the ones who ignored the information. They asked us to give them the flexibility to deal with what they told us was an imminent, catastrophic, lethal threat to our entire country. And we gave them that. And they completely laughed all the way to the fucking bank.
And now I want to take Paul Wolfowitz's advice.
Yeah.
If you don't mind.
No.
And let's not talk about where we've been. Let's talk about where we are now.
Yeah, so let's not look at the past. The past is full of scary things, like evidence of my duplicity and treason and all those other things, and me being wrong about shit. So
but
let's
I
not
want
look
to
at
talk
past.
About what's happening now, because Rachel Maddow went about 80% full drip glass this week.
She did. But it's the 20%.
I think she went as far as she could absolutely go.
I agree completely.
I keep her job.
But that last bit is the bit I want to talk about too.
I know.
Please go
ahead. I know you want to talk about David Gregory and Chuck Todd.
A little bit.
And just the fact that they are left out by name by Rachel Maddow when she said, you know, we are really frustrated that all these neocons are back on television talking about Iraq, but there is hope in the fact that there is pushback, and that major internet publications like Salon are saying, why is Paul Wolfowitz on our TV? Why is Paul Bremer on our TV?
Mm-hmm.
I want to answer that question.
Yep.
And here is what I think we're missing in all of this, and that is the 800-pound elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about. Paul Bremer and Wolfowitz and John McCain and you have a list on our notes.
I do.
Let me read that list here. John Cornyn, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Bill Kristol, John McCain.
That's just my off the top of my head this week.
Off the top
list.
Of your head.
Yeah.
They've all been on television. I personally think we need to find John McCain a luxury assisted living facility with an Oval Office in it for him. So
he has one. It's called the United States Senate.
Yeah.
It's called the U.S. The U.S. Senate is nothing
that
but.
It really is. The U.S. Senate is now a luxury assisted living facility for a lot of people. It really is. I hadn't thought of it that way.
And they insulate themselves from the weather with money. And by the way, John Cornyn was not on television. John Cornyn retweeted Ben Shapiro. The idea that 4,500 Americans gave their lives to free Iraq and it only took one president to lose it. That's the latest lie. And this again should come as a surprise to no one.
All right, but because here's the deal, Driftless.
Uh-huh.
I don't think these folks are being invited on these networks because they are experts in Iraq. They are lobbyists.
Of course, yeah.
For intervention. And we don't want to have the other side on the air.
Right.
Because our advertisers are GE.
Yes.
And Northrop Grumman.
Raytheon.
And Raytheon.
Yeah.
And this is about, and I hate to sound like Ralph Nader. I really do.
No, Ralph Nader has many good ideas.
But he has
governing
many good
a country
ideas.
Is not one of them, but he has many other good ideas.
And he has the idea that the military-industrial complex, you know, I sound like a conspiracy theorist left-wing loon when I say this.
Yeah.
But They own the media.
Yes, they do.
They own it.
They do. Yes, they do. They sure do.
And literally own it. And if we don't see that first and recognize that the news that you're getting from ABC this week has been filtered through companies who make money off of death.
Yeah. Well,
and I did want to add one thing.
Not just the filters.
The line in the coverage this week, Drift Glass. I'm sorry to.
No, please.
Interrupt you. But there was a line in the coverage this week about, you know, ISIS is just moving from city to city and just taking over.
Right.
And one of the groups that had to be rescued were 50 employees of Siemens.
Yeah, all the contracts.
Siemens is a German company. I've been doing a lot of research on them this morning. They do all kinds of things. One of the things they're really good at, according to their website, is oil. They're good at transporting oil and making pipeline and creating flow tracks. And there's all these things that they do that help transport oil from one place to another. And they got caught in this, you know, eight of them were German, and I think 42 of them were Americans. But it is a German-owned company. And they had to be rescued by American forces, by somebody who paid for that was not an Iraqi militant.
Right.
You know,
all the contractors that are
all in. The contractors, all the people in, you know, we removed staff from the embassy and so on and so forth. But really, there are a lot of companies around the world that avoid paying taxes to the United States that totally rely on the U.S. military to protect their employees and interest and don't pay taxes to back up that protection, to pay for that protection. I'm not trying to turn the U.S. government into a mob, into the mob, but honestly, pay up. If you want your employees and your interests protected overseas, you better be paying taxes to the U.S. military.
This is the opposite of the redcoats.
Yeah.
We are being asked to protect and guard and lay down our lives for corporations without any compensation
for it, really.
Because that's just the cost of doing business. Actually, they've already paid. They paid in bribing senators they paid in legal bribery in the form of campaign contributions.
And tax lawyers. Yeah.
They've paid.
We're supposed to be able to audit the Pentagon as of next year. Did you know that, Driftglass?
I did not know
that's
that.
That's the timeline. Is they're supposed to be ready for an audit next year, 2015.
That's great.
They ain't ready.
I think look for the giant pile of burning documents out in the courtyard as they destroy
and
all
that. Apparently, it's too big. They just claim, no, we're too big. You can't audit us.
Too big to audit.
There's a group called Audit the Pentagon on Facebook, which unites Nader and Grover Norquist.
Yes. Well, I'm not surprised. And Dennis Kucinich and
responsible spending.
Rand Paul.
They want it understood that the biggest Defense Department in the universe, bigger than the next 16 countries combined. And they indicate on their website that current law, the way it's written, is complete. It's just that the Pentagon isn't obeying the law.
Doesn't have to.
To their requirements.
You know who doesn't have to obey the law?
You're supposed to have your books in order. Congress has already passed that. Waiting for Congress to act in this.
You don't have to obey the law when you have an army. When you have all the guns and all the tanks and all the aircraft, you really don't have to worry about the cop coming in the door and going, can I see your books?
And this is why I think liberals are at a tremendous disadvantage, which is that conservatives have a completely amoral approach to money and investments.
Yeah.
It's just profit. No, profit's good. You know, there's nothing about it that's bad. You make a profit, and if it kills people, if it takes over countries, if it lies us into war.
But if it destroys the environment, that's someone else's problem.
I was going through investment websites to try to find out which of these military industrial complex companies pay the lowest amount of tax, and I had a really hard time finding that. There's a few websites that help you out, but I was going through these investment websites, and sure enough, there was one investment website that pointed out the advantages of the oil industry in being a low tax industry. Just said blandly.
Yeah.
Like, this is fossil fuel that's destroying the planet. No, it's a low tax industry, which makes it a good investment.
Yeah, it's a great investment.
Okay.
Well, did you see an email? I don't want to quote it out of context. And we get a lot of emails, some of which we cite sort of in passing, some of which we read. A gentleman who sent along a copy of Patriot Investments
I didn't get that.
Oh, well, I should dig that out, and we should probably read that on the air, because it's basically a clip from their prospectus, which was, you know, after the, and I'm exaggerating, but slightly, you know, after the mass shooting, a lot of people got out of the gun market. That's when Patriot Investments got in. You know, it's that kind of, yeah, sure, it killed a lot of people and fucked things up, but you know,
it's going to make you money in the long run.
So, and it, it there is, a, and that is how,
and it is, it's that completely amoral approach to profit.
Corporations are not people. Corporations are sharks. They're eating machines. That's all they do. Yep. And the only thing stopping them from eating everything and turning the entire planet into shark poop is government. And that's the very thing the shark is now chewing on, has been chewing on for at least since Teddy Roosevelt, which is, we have to get these government bastards out of our way so we can continue the job of consuming the planet. They act like a virus, and they're not going to stop acting like a virus.
It's the role of government to stop them, which is why there's a lot of corporate money telling you government's evil, government's wrong, government can't do anything.
And the other institution that's supposed to be helping to keep them in check is the free press. And that brings us back to ABC News, which is, I understand the fact that the news is filtered, broadly speaking, through the corporate filters. It is a different thing completely when you hire Bill Kristol and put him on the air. You can put all the, you know, you can in the editing room, you can cut out all the liberal stuff. You can refuse to talk about everything I want to talk about. You can pretend it's all bullshit. You can put on Harold Ford Jr. until the cows come home to sit there jerking off to the Wall Street Journal and talking about both sides, both sides, both sides. But when you hire, when you go out of your way, when the 12-year-old producer on This Week, who has a job there for reasons I don't even fucking begin to understand. This person went from a sleepaway camp counselor to the head of his college newspaper to one of the executive producers on a major network television show in like 4 minutes. And one of his first decisions was to hire Bill Kristol, who's a brilliant thinker. And that's what I want to get at. That's because there's no other place to get to stick a lever in. There's no other weak point in this. You cannot reason with conservatives, period. This Week has absolutely fucking proved that. John Cornyn proves you cannot reason with conservatives. Dick Cheney can't reason with someone like Sean Hannity. They are beyond reaching. The only place where there's any hope of getting in and cracking open and getting at the rot and the filth that's messing it all up is at these interstitial points where the people involved have to pretend at least to be reasonable. They have to at least say both sides. That's the point at which you can say, well, yeah, but what about this? What about this? What about this? I'm not saying it's hopeful. And so I'm not saying that's a winning strategy. I'm just saying I can't think of any other strategy. And so the decision to put Bill Kristol on ABC television as a full-time employee, as the guy for whom they swapped out George Will to Fox News, was made by somebody. And Rachel Maddow, this is where I get back to Dr. Maddow, the kindly Dr. Maddow, who I like very much and admire very much, and we have her book and she's awesome. But here's the question that haunts me a little bit, which is, she will get, and I understand completely why she's not doing this. I really do. I'm not faulting her for this at all. I'm saying this presents a really depressing paradox for liberals, which is, if she can name names on other networks, here is Bill O'Reilly being a fucking nut job, and here is Sean Hannity being a dick, and here's Dick Cheney. And then when we get to the subject of news networks who allow neoconservatives back into the fold and back onto the air to lie even more, oh, she suddenly turns into the media, the Sunday shows.
But she did say the Sunday show.
She did.
She's as far as she can go. Yeah.
And the reason is as far as she can go. And my point was, and I realize no one's going to listen. I'll never hear from her. I'll never hear from her staff. But that's the point. Derek Gregory's never going to return my phone calls. His assistant is never going to return my phone calls. His intern, whoever the hell picks up his dry cleaning, none of these people are ever going to take anyone like me seriously. So there's no way for anyone like me on the outside of the media bubble to ever find out for sure who the fuck is making these decisions and why they're making them. The only person equipped to do that is sitting down the hall from David Gregory, 20 feet. If Rachel Maddow wanted to know on camera why the hell we're putting Paul Wolfowitz on Meet the Press, all she has to do is pick up a video camera, walk about 400 feet, and ask. And the reason that's never going to happen, everyone knows, is because she'd be fired that day. That'd be her last day on the air. So my question is, if she is hostage, if everyone on television who's a liberal in this tiny little corner where we actually can see a little bit how the machine works, if everyone in that corner is actually being held hostage by their paycheck and are prevented affirmatively making decisions.
But not just their paycheck, also their access to all of us.
Absolutely, and all the good work they do.
And that's more important than a paycheck for some people.
And all the, I don't discount all the good work they do. I don't discount the climate change stuff they do. I don't discount all the women's rights, voting rights. I don't discount any of that. But if you want to stop people from putting Paul Wolfowitz on the air and continuing this cycle of putting lunatics and liars back on television, giving them credibility again and again and again, at some point you have to get to the person who's making that decision. And when that person is making – the person who's making that decision is sitting right next to you, and you won't name them by name. You won't even turn a camera on them. When you will talk about everybody else on right-wing radio, which is hopeless and useless, or far – anyone who's far, far away is fair game. But anybody in your building, you are prevented from talking about. The question that comes up is, what else are you not telling me? What else about the media? What else about this clear conspiracy to put really dangerous, crazy, awful, filthy, traitorous people on television?
Who are lobbying for exactly what you are, everything that you're against. Yeah.
Who? What other things about that conspiracy are you refusing to tell us? Because if you told us, you'd be fired. And that's where I throw up my hands and go, I don't know. You know, there used to be a time, I mentioned this, there used to be a time when we had people like DC Media Girl and Media Whores and, frankly, people like Steve Gilliard, who had some kind of overlapping access and could point to people inside the machine and say, they're doing it. That person right there is doing it, and here's why. And as grand and as wonderful as it is to see, you know, Morning Joe is a waste of time and a bunch of other people on MSNBC are just kind of, you know, there filling space. If there's this tiny little corner of the big dead media where liberals get to have their say. There's no other place like that anywhere in the media. And yet even in this tiny little corner, this all we have, this little French resistance, it's all we have. We're still not allowed to point to David Gregory and say he's the problem. And that scares the shit out of me because it means they can hide an infinite number of secrets under that umbrella and I'll never know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I hope that Rachel Maddow is keeping a post-retirement diary.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll come out. In our lifetime.
It'll all come out once it's too late.
Yeah.
It'll all come out like former speechwriters, like former Bush administration officials.
Or Nixon. Yeah.
It'll all come out after the damage is done, after the criminals have gotten away with murder. Then it'll all come out. And
Benghazi.
And that's too late. Let's go to Benghazi, shall we?
Benghazi. Speaking of 2003 2.0, what about Benghazi 2.0? When you catch the guy, and the guy who did it says, yeah, Susan Rice was right.
Uh-huh.
It was the video that prompted us to do this.
And
you caught the guy.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, yeah, this is a distraction from Hillary's book. This is to distract us so that Hillary's book gets a bump.
Okay, show of hands. Okay. everyone out there in our vast listening audience, which is approaching 10,000 people a week, frankly,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I'm extraordinarily grateful and extraordinarily honored.
And we're still at 1% donor class. Donor class is at the 1%. But we're grateful for all of your listenership. And if you love this podcast, we appreciate your donation.
We do. And we appreciate when you call us or write us and say, look, I'm flat busted. I got nothing. I'd like to send you a book or something. Even if we're overloaded, even if we can't squeeze.
Overloaded on books?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
We really are.
But
the fact that you thought of us, the gesture is so kind and so we really do appreciate it. Now, after I've flattered everybody, where the hell was I going?
You were talking about Benghazi and
oh yeah, show of hands.
Hillary's books.
Okay, all 10,000 of you, raise your hands if you didn't see this coming. Who out there, knowing what you know about the media, could not have absolutely fucking predicted that the minute the news was we caught the guy. Oh, and by the way, all the shit you've been saying isn't true. Instead of doing what anything remotely resembling journalism would do, which is, oh, retract it and apologize. We issue a correction. It is quick. Move on to the next lie. Okay, let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about Hillary's book. Let's talk about the convenient timing of it all. Let's talk about the conspiracy. Let's talk about why it took him so long. And, you know, we get emails and at least one person who I will not identify under any circumstances pointed out that it took the people involved in doing this rescue a year to rehearse it, prepare for it, get ready for it. This is not something you just strolling off the street and do. By the way, and it, however many days it was, 650, that is how many years less than it took Bush to capture the guy who blew up the Twin Towers? Oh, that's right. He never did he? He just lost interest after a while.
He said, I don't think about him.
And you know what? The minute he said that, the entire right wing of the party said, we don't think about him either. Let's talk about Saddam Hussein. And then Saddam Hussein blew up in their face and they had to talk about something else. So we are now into the 250th generation iteration of the lie that we're going to tell to prevent us from discussing the fact that we have gotten everything fucking wrong for the last 30 years. So since we're never going to discuss that, we always need another lie. We always need the next bullshit. And the thing that has changed, I think, for liberals is we can see it coming now.
Yeah.
You know, we can see the stitches on the fucking ball as it comes across the plate. We know what the next lie is going to be because they always lie. We know what the next email from Crazy Uncle Liberty is going to say because he's full of shit and he always lies and he always falls for it. And he always throws up his hands and says, well, you know, when caught, both sides, both sides. And on we move to the next lie and the next and the next. So this is the way it's going to be for the rest of your lives, people, unless something pretty fundamental changes. And the first way to change it is to punish the shit out of the people who give them an escape route. And the escape route they always take is both sides do it. So
both sides. Speaking of both sides, Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Take this and run with it, would you, Blue Gal? Because
I want to talk a little bit about Thad Cochran and the fact that there's these ads on TV about the 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Thad Cochran's been leaving his keys in the fridge a lot lately.
He has. And it's the fridge in the barn where you
where you have the goats and the sheep,
where he goes to have sex with animals, apparently.
And where he doesn't realize that the majority leader has been primaried out. I hate the word primary as a verb, but yeah, he didn't even, I don't know what's going on, really?
What?
Yeah, Eric Cantor lost his seat. What?
What? Tom DeLay is what?
This points to a larger issue.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fact that Thad Cochran is too old to be running for the U.S. Senate should come as a surprise to no one. No. The fact that, you know, I had an argument with someone on email this week about whether Hillary Clinton is too old to run for president. She's 66.
Yeah.
And my argument is, no, she's not too old because 37 senators are older than she is.
Yeah.
So we're not going to have that conversation because the 37 senators that are older than she is want to hold their seats.
Yes.
I think it's safe to say she's the last of their generation that's going to run for president or be elected president. And I've said this before, but one of the things that makes people very suspicious of Obama, I think, is not just his race, but his age. You know, he's in his 40s. So
he's in his 50s.
Yeah.
But remember, 50 is the new 40, or 40 is the new presidential 50, you know, or something like that.
70 is the new whatever. Yeah. And this is not ageism. I mean, I know for a fact that Bernie Sanders, who's older than Hillary, he's one of those that's older than Hillary, is, you know, you can love him or hate him, but he's sharp as a tack. You know, there are some that are just not going the way of McCain. But I'm worried about the fact that the Koch brothers and the right-wing establishment has invested so much in having such a deep bench.
Yeah.
And we have
a deep, crazy bench.
Deep, crazy bench.
Yeah. A deep, crazy bench and a deep infrastructure to support them.
And to elect them. Yep.
Yes. And they have their own media. They have their own think tanks. They have their own support groups. They have their own white paper. They have their own religion. They have their own everything. And you can
accuse me of ageism if you want to, but we do have a Congress and a Senate in particular that is rapidly aging out and will be gone.
They just are.
It's 10 years. They just will. And the young blood of the Congress that's coming in is Tea Party.
Yep.
And we have to do something about that. I'm worried that the next 20 years are going to be about just electing presidents that can halt what's going on in the Congress.
Yeah. Well, this was the strategy with the Supreme Court. This is why the Not a Dime's Worth of Difference caucus, who I understand. I used to be a member in good standing of that back when I voted for John Anderson. I understand the impulse. I really do. But when you look at how strategically the right has packed the Supreme Court, and when you look at the results of that court packing and the results that will continue to unfold for the next 20 years, you realize that maybe actually it makes a difference which party controls the levers of power. Even if you don't get everything you want, even if you have to hold your nose to do it, it actually matters whether or not you have a Supreme Court run by ultra right-wing ideologues mm-hmm. who are relatively young and are going to be there a while, or a Supreme Court run by people who think a lot more like you do and are willing to look at the law as an active tool for helping the poor, the indigent, the sick, and the discriminated against rather than corporations. And that the fallout from those decisions will last far beyond your lifetime or mine.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. but it's that investment in you know, this is going back to Reagan. Reagan getting rid of, I bring this up occasionally, Reagan got rid of the Fairness Doctrine, yep. which of course precipitated a lot of nonsense. The Fairness Doctrine wasn't great, but it was something. But the two justices he used to pry it loose from Congress and have a ruling that gave him the right to unilaterally kill the thing were Robert Bork and Tony Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had these people in place decades ago. And they breed them at the local level. They breed them in circuit courts. They train them. They fed them. They get them rich. They get them positions. They get them prestige. And they elevate them to a position where they can do maximal damage to everything you hold dear. And we just don't do that. I can't, because the amount of money I have to invest in these things can be found in the sofa cushions mm-hmm. of middle child's downstairs seat.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of time and effort I have is limited. I'd love to give it to a cause that that would make a difference, but I have however many hours a week I can devote to that, and
well, we all do.
That's
yeah.
what I have.
Yep.
So you know, money buys you time, and a substantial investment in liberal media, liberal causes, liberal this, liberal that would make an enormous difference.
Yeah.
We're being outspent hundreds to one. And
I think it goes back to the moral sense of money that the left has that the right doesn't. And,
well, and
this is just investment. I don't care if it's destroying the environment.
Exactly.
Or
this is
fair or disenfranchises black people. Well, you know, we're going to win. That's the point. Yeah.
And it's being I hate to say this. It's patient capital. It's mm-hmm. investing over and over and over again mm-hmm. over a period of mm-hmm. decades mm-hmm. to push the country in the direction you want it to go in. And we just don't do that. And
And I won't do that. I mean, I'm not going to become that person that, I mean, I hope that we're providing a service to people. I hope when people tune into the show, they feel like they're going to learn something. I hope they feel like they're benefiting from it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to do a mass email every week saying send $3. I'm not going to become that person.
Oh, Blue Gal, what do you mean every week?
I get one twice a day.
Dear Drift.
Yeah.
Who the hell is Drift? Oh, that's right. That's the name I used. And you get Dear Frank, right?
And the people that send out those emails make $75,000 a year at least.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm not denigrating their cause.
I'm not denigrating their cause. I'm just not going to become that person.
I can set the stopwatch. Hey, look, Paul Wolfowitz is on television lying about Iraq. Set the stopwatch 2 hours later. Dear Drift, are you as sick as I am of Paul Wolfowitz something something? Donate $3.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same person. And whatever the crisis du jour is, it's always the cure is sign a petition, send me $3.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. But if you
And yet, Drift Glass, who are in the bottom 10 of the youngest senators, of the 100 senators out there, the bottom 10 youngest, the bottom 10 in terms of age? Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio two of the youngest senators, and they'll be there forever.
I would bet Rand Paul's in that group too. This is not the fundraising hour. Well, believe me, we'll do that. I will shake that hat relentlessly, but that's not the problem. The problem is lack of sort of institutional investors,
mm-hmm.
institutional strength on the left who are willing to put up a lot of money and a lot of talent over a long period of time to focus on specific individual issues and races.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to flit between this and this and this and this. One of the most, I think, educational things about doing this for a decade, which you and I have done now, or this podcast for 237 episodes,
mm-hmm.
is that we do a lot of reading.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
But there ain't no way in the world I can jump between knowing about Benghazi to knowing about Bergdahl to knowing about birth control and then back again across gun control, voting rights in the degree of depth required to make an impact on those issues. That's why we need institutional organizations on the left that do those things all day long, full of eager, young, intelligent, and middle-aged. I wouldn't object to helping in those areas. But smart, well-funded, people who are going to do it for 20. The people who used to be like Ted Kennedy's congressional or Senate staff, mm-hmm. who knew this stuff inside and out because they've been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, they weren't headed to K Street.
Exactly. Yep. They were there for a reason, and they weren't being lured away by the fact that the only fools go into public service for any reason other than to make money, mm-hmm. which is another conservative victory. Once you've destroyed any sense of public service as a noble goal, why bother doing it? Because you know what? I'll offer you five times what you're making to undo everything you just did.
Well, and being a member of the House is no longer public service either.
No.
Because the parties make you do fundraising for half your day.
It's a resume builder for your real job on K Street.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that bitter note.
and just to go back to that question you had about Rand Paul. Rand Paul and David Vitter are both in the bottom 20 in terms of age. Yeah. So there you go. They're electing those young, fresh faces in the U.S. Senate are Tea Party, you know, going for the Tea Party.
As we know, there is no Tea Party.
Well, but that's where the pretend energy in the Republican Party is.
It's the real energy from the pretend brand that is just the base all along.
Exactly.
But they've as I wrote a long time ago, all they've done is unshield the nuclear core at the center of the party.
Mm-hmm.
The crazies they had pretended were never there for 30 years, they just turn them loose. And now they are really running things. And they have an enormous amount of energy, and the energy is all crazy. But it does work. It gets them to the polls. It gets them in the rallies. It walks them into Target carrying automatic weapons. It gets them to cheer on lunatics who shoot at Bureau of Land Management people or threaten to. That's, you know, I recognize their faith, and I recognize their energy, and I recognize their commitment. But that doesn't mean they're good. That just means they have a lot of energy and they have a lot of focus. And all of that has been unleashed by people like Eric Cantor, who suddenly discovered that eventually Golem will turn on you. Hi there.
Can I end with some celebrity news?
I'd be delighted if you would end with celebrity news. You have it in our notes as ellipses, so I assume it's going to be a surprise to me.
In this week in celebrity news, you know that Kim Kardashian and Kanye West got married.
I only know that because I was not allowed not to know that by my culture.
That's right. You were not allowed to know that. Not allowed to not know that. Yes.
I hid from that. The town crier came to my door at 2 a.m. and demanded that I know that.
Kim Ye. Okay.
I don't want to know this. I don't care about either of those people. And together they make twice as much of a pile that I don't care about. But okay.
It was revealed by Kanye West. They had a terrible disappointment in their wedding in that the famous photographer, Annie Leibovitz, pulled out of photographing their wedding day before the wedding, which is horrible for any couple to have the photographer pull out the last minute.
It is.
So to make up for it, Kanye and Kim spent 4 days photoshopping their wedding picture to put it up on Instagram. And we sat there and worked on that photo for like 4 days because the flowers were off color.
So are the thoughts going through my mind right now, but okay.
This is about how important Kim is to the internet.
I know everybody wants their wedding to be perfect. Our wedding was perfect.
Our wedding was perfect, and we didn't Photoshop any of the photos.
No.
The cake was not Photoshopped.
The cake was actually frosted by children.
Yeah, by children with sprinkles.
Awesome.
There was a heart made of sprinkles in the middle of the sheet cake that we baked together in the kitchen
on some planet out there somewhere that occupies the same geographic space as our country, this is apparently a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very big problem that needs to be reported on with the kind of in-depth talent, the kind of reportorial firepower devoted to it that one would think reporting on why is Paul Wolfowitz on my fucking television would warrant. But it doesn't.
Or maybe the abandoned children that are coming across our southern border.
Yes, maybe that would
be. Maybe they would like to be on Instagram with Kim and Kanye. I don't know.
Well, we'd have to lighten their color up a little bit. Because, you know.
Terrible.
Yeah,
no.
Well. Because the only place I've heard of this, honestly, I mean, I'm a selective reader and consumer of news, but the only place that's really focused on this is Fox News. And, you know, that it's the and all of the emails one gets from Crazy Uncle Liberty about
we're being invaded by
these people that Barack Obama is inviting to the country because he hates America and wants to install a caliphate, blah, blah, blah. And they took a break from wall-to-wall Benghazi Bergdahl coverage to talk about the other sinister plot. And that's the point.
Which is that these are anchor babies who weren't even born here.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there will never come a time in your lifetime or mine, I don't think, when whatever the right-wing media morphs into will not just be moving from lie to lie to lie to lie to lie forever, because they can't stop, because what, you know, what happens when you go cold turkey from being a pathological liar is you throw up and you vomit and you have to look at yourself in the mirror and then you go, holy shit, what have I done to myself? Because they don't want to do that. They have to keep putting that cardiac needle full of lies directly into their chest every fucking day. And there has to be somebody, Roger Ailes, at Fox, who keeps cooking up the next lie and the next and the next and the next. The fact that I realize I'm beating that dead horse, but the fact that we know that that's how that works, and we can watch it happen in real time, and that the best we can do is look with alarm. The best that liberal media can manage is to point to and go, oh my goodness, look how awful Bill O'Reilly is today, is appalling, because there's no way into that machine. There is a way into the both sides do it machine. It's just the price of getting into it is too high for the people that we trust to pay. Mm-hmm. So that's a shame. See what I did? I took your lovely celebrity news. I made it depressing.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Babo. The owner of Babo, being an expatriate living and working in South Korea, most of his human friends are very transient. Through a good times and bad, marriage and divorce, Babo is always there to allay my problems and pull a big smile across my face. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Unions letter on the air unless you say otherwise. And as a side note, I noted today in the news that congressional Republicans have balked at removing Saturday mail delivery.
You know what?
Apparently, that's their constituents like getting mail on Saturdays. So,
you know what? That's a really nice thing to hear.
That's a nice thing to end on. Yep.
I love my goddamn socialist post office.
I do too.
My goddamn postal unions.
Right.
And you know what? That's really, to me, that's really good news.
That's really good news.
We won one.
Amen.
The good guys won one.
Yes, we did.
All right.
So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, being Lost fans, the Internet Kitties are delighted that it's 2003 all over again.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
But do they get to go through the disappointment of the finale of Lost all over again, too?
That's the problem with it being 2003 all over again.
Lost is still good.
Yeah. being a conservative, you have that memento disease. You don't form new political memories after 1997, so you just don't know what's happening next. Mm-hmm. Being liberal kitties, however, they know what's coming.
They know what's coming.
And they try to live in the moment, but they kind of know that it's going to end really badly.
Science Fiction University from our friends at Magnolia ePublishing. I discovered, or they let me know this week, that they have a podcast called Mysteries Compound Podcast. I listened to a few minutes of it. I didn't have much time today to listen, but they just emailed it to me this morning. It's all kinds of funny sounds and guys joking around about stuff, and they definitely have a library of audio and interesting things. So we will be relying on them again, I'm sure.
Well, that's very cool.
Yeah. They are on iTunes and on Stitcher. So,
oh, wow.
Again,
okay.
Compound Mysteries. And they just seem, it's very eclectic. They just seem to have a lot of different interesting audio to share with us. So go check them out.
Well, we appreciate the interesting audio they send to make me look stupid every week.
and Dogfaced Herman both have really pitched in, and anything Dogfaced Herman, we can do anything to plug anything projects of yours, let us know. Magnolia ePublishing writes to us and said, here are 10 clips about science fiction. They are from various podcasts, and they may be from their podcast, but they're also from Earwolf and We Hate Movies podcast, Chronic Rift Network, and Gate World. So hats off to all of those podcasts out there. And let's get started.
All right.
And he says easiest ones are first.
Uh-huh.
Number one is actually a parody song. What are they parodying?
Then after Plan 8 went over budget, lots of aliens were fired, careers were dashed, people wept, and the consultants were hired, and they came up with a plan that spun everyone's heads. You want to conquer the Earth? You got to...
Oh, I have no idea. It sounds like I don't know. It sounds like a Filk song from a science fiction convention.
Right. But I think you're exactly on the money with that. It is Plan 9 from Outer Space is what they are parodying.
Crap.
And it's the riff tones from Riff Tracks.
Okay.
Singing Plans 1 through 9. The bleeped out words are reanimate the dead. That's their Plan 9.
This is like that test they give you in school in like 7th grade where the...
Right, where they say, read the instructions completely, and then the last instruction is write your name at the top of this paper and turn it in and do not do any of the tests. Yeah.
Yes, I feel like I failed you.
All right, number two is some podcasters talking about a specific person. Who are they talking about?
When he started off, he flirted with kind of hardcore socialism, and he kept this as a real secret afterwards. He had been possibly a member of the Communist Party, though most people think not, but he had campaigned for socialist candidates in California. He'd run for office himself and been unsuccessful. This was supposedly all by his first wife, about whom he never talked afterwards.
So that's Bob Heinlein.
That's right.
Yeah.
I've never heard you call him Bob before.
Yeah, well, you know, me and Bob. Bob Heinlein. Yeah, Robert Anson Heinlein. That's Robert Heinlein talking about his... We're
talking about Robert Heinlein's politics.
His early days, yeah.
Yep. Number three, you should get this one right away. Who are they talking about?
Last night we saw an unwitting victim fall for a fishy trap. Caught by the Finny Fiends. Umbrellas.
Oh, it's Batman.
It's Batman. They're talking about the Penguin.
The Penguin, yes. Yeah.
Yes. All right, here's one where they're talking about a science fiction movie.
I'm not the biggest Chicago Cubs fan, but I know a little bit about them. I've never seen the Chicago Cub Bear.
No.
Ever. Well, the bear becomes the hit of the party because now Mac, who decides that he's great at popping and locking, he jumps up on a counter and dances.
I have no clue. I mean,
that one is Mac and Me, which is probably one of the worst E.T. ripoffs out there. But.
Okay. Yeah. See, I feel proud that I don't know that one, frankly. Yeah. There's some stuff. Go ahead.
Let's move on. Number five. You should recognize the singing voice at the end of this clip, but what is this?
Observing your Earth.
Listen, Mike, I'm sorry, babe, but we can't...
And we'd like to make...
I'm sorry, Mike, we... There's...
A contact with you. Baby.
In your mind, you have capacities, you know.
All right, well, that's... What's her name?
That's correct.
Anorexia Karen Carpenter.
Karen Carpenter.
Sorry that's how I remember her, but that's how I remember her. I have no idea what...
Known as anorexia. Thank you. That's really helpful.
I'm sorry. I apologize. That's
nasty.
The way... Well, that's the way my memory... That's what she died.
Everyone thinks that about her. It's
my memory's wired that way.
That's a sad disease.
It is. And I apologize for my mind being wired the way it is, but it is. I have no idea what the hell that is.
It's an actual... published song that they published called Calling Occupants of Interplanetary Craft.
Oh, great. And sounds like something they submitted.
There's no getting over that rainbow, let me tell you.
Right. It sounds like something they submitted to Rush to put on the 2112 album. It was just rejected.
And when you look at the YouTube of that, it's amazingly bad. Okay. Yeah. Number six, which podcast are talking about what? 6, 7, and 8 are all from the We Hate Movies podcast.
This movie begins with a Star Wars crawl of text read by James Earl Jones, big kawinky dink.
In the third millennium, the world changed. Climate, nations, all were in upheaval.
Shit, I don't know. I forget how space balls start, but I'm going to take a shot that might be...
That's a good guess. Because Spaceballs does start with that Star Wars opening. But it's actually Judge Dredd.
Oh, yeah. Okay. See, that movie, the two times I've seen it, I caught at the one-third mark on basic cable. So Apparently it has an opening and Rob Schneider in it. So there you go.
All right. Number 7. And this is, again, the We Hate Movies podcast talking about what movie?
They get so much damage, they have to eject the warp core because the Sona has this reality-altering gun that was banned called whatever, and there's a rift in space-time. So, I don't know, shoot the warp core at it?
Which is my favorite kind of logic. Dump the X onto whatever we're running from and then blow X up. And maybe we'll be okay. It's going to do one of two things. Destroy whatever you're running from, or the explosion will be such that you are pushed forward fast enough away from whatever rift is going on. It's amazing. It's a failsafe that has never once not worked.
All right. I lose track of which awful Star Trek Next Generation
movie. Yeah, it's hard to remember all the names of them, but this one is... He says Star Trek in action. No, I mean Insurrection.
Yeah, it's one of the many, many movies where we just decide that all the stuff you saw on the TV show and the rules they followed and the characters that we built and all of their internal characteristics, we're going to shit all over that and make a movie that's completely the opposite of everything that you're expecting. So way to go. And this one, I do recall, starred F. Murray Abraham.
Oh, my.
As, and it just these, it was a terrible movie. It was The Fountain of Youth, and Kirk got laid a lot, and there was a technology. It was a mess. Yeah. Don't watch it. I'm not surprised that it's on the We Hate Movies podcast.
Yeah. Number 8.
Asteroid-related disaster movies that came out in the summer of 1998. This is not the one that everybody still talks about with Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis and the big Transformers director. No. This is the one with Robert Duvall and Mary McCormick and other such action movie stars as Elijah Wood.
And the exhilarating Taya Leone.
Oh, okay. That's Deep Impact.
That is Deep Impact. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, very good. Morgan Freeman, Tia Leone, I think.
Yeah, she's a great comedic actress. People don't appreciate her.
A few others.
Really as much.
But it was the good Asteroid Destroys the Earth movie, or nearly destroys the movie. But the one that was most remembered, where I was working at a college at the time. I was helping run a college department at the time, and all my techies put themselves into the poster.
Okay.
So because it was a Bruce Willis movie and it was you know, things blowed up real good and they were like so it was funny. I that's how I remember it.
All right, number 9.
The fact, you know, everybody loves a dog, and you know, that's an old writer's trope. If you want your protagonist to be identified as the protagonist, you make dogs like him.
Yeah, and then kill the dogs.
And then, well, that's...
Well, Campbell did it. He killed over 70 of them. Well,
and exactly, and that's exactly the point.
And the monster was even more cruel because it didn't take over one dog and allowed them to use that dog as a test subject.
Oh, easy. For any real science fiction fan, that's John Campbell's who goes there. That's John W. Campbell.
Yeah.
Who was the creator of the one of the original science fiction magazines that published a lot of Heinlein in the 50s and 60s. And it was made, as The Thing, which starred James Arness, I believe, in a rubber suit. That was the first version. And then John Carpenter reshot it in a second version. I think there's been
I read his description of this. It is John Campbell's Who Goes There remade as John Carpenter's The Thing. That's what they're talking about.
Sorry, dude. You skipped the I imagine they're reviewing the remake, but it's been remade. It's been made twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm possibly a third time, although I can't swear to that.
All right, finally, number 10. This is supposed to be the hardest one.
Oh, yeah.
What show are they talking about, and which episode, if you're that nerdy?
Aaron Sorkin, who has wrote West Wing, he wrote Social Network, he once said that the best writing is where you write the comedy to get to the drama, and you write the drama to get to the comedy. Now, obviously, it is predominantly a comedy episode, but... Because of that, when Jack just lashes out toward the end and expresses that there's no way he would want to see his son again just to know he's going to have to witness yet again his son dying, that hits you in the gut.
Man, that's a good one. There are a lot of shows going on in that period, like Sliders and Quantum Leap. The Greatest American Hero, that can't be it. I don't know. Can I have another clue?
It's from a podcast called Gate World.
Oh, well, then it's got to be a Stargate episode.
It is Stargate.
Because that thing's been on since, you know, for 15 years or so.
Yeah.
I have no idea what episode it was.
I got to admire Gate World. They're at gateworld.net.
Uh-huh.
They've been podcasting since 2008. And they're still podcast. I mean, I love it when I open up a podcast website. They've been around longer than we have, and they still have a current episode up. That's very impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah. Well, and dedication. That's one of those shows I would dial into and out of from time to time. I liked it. It was a fine premise, an old, venerated science fiction premise.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way you get around having to have starships is by having jump gates. And you usually combine, mix and match both of them. But I always liked it. I just never – it was really episodic in the sense that you could tune in and then tune out for 3 months and then tune back in, and you haven't missed much of anything.
Right.
It's the same core group of people fighting the same thing over and over. I know there was an overarching story that I always thought was kind of, okay, that's fine. But it was a good, serviceable, durable science fiction on which you could hang any ornament you wanted. So – good. Well, that's
good. Thank you very much, Magnolia ePublishing.
Thank you
to the podcasters whose work we sliced today. We appreciate it. Thank you, Driftglass.
My pleasure, Blue Gal. Love you.
Love you. Bye.